You're listening to the Donor Growth Podcast, forward-looking conversations for those who believe that donor growth is possible.
Every week, we'll explore a thought-provoking topic to help build deeper relationships with more of your donors. We are your hosts, Luis Diaz
and Mike Dirksen. Now let's get into it.
Okay, so this is the Donor Growth Podcast, and we're off on a tangent of really short episodes with a strong point of view, and we're diving into topics that we think are really important that people should be thinking about in the summer. No,
So first of all, camera on, check. Microphone working, check. Light on, check. Asking Luis if he has a hard stop at the top of the hour so I don't make him late for his next meeting, check. I think we went through our pre-show checklist.
Very good. Well, take off. I'm getting a little bit of pushback on these topics, Mike, which is focusing on like optimization, coordination issues. Some people say, oh, you're adding more bureaucracy? Really, Mike and Luis? I thought you stood for everything opposite from that. But we are going to talk about process.
We're gonna talk about checklists specifically. And before we do, can I tell you two quick stories?
Okay.
So the first one is not mine. The second one is mine. So the first one comes from a book called The Checklist Manifesto. Somebody actually wrote a book just on why you should have checklists. Mm-hmm. And it comes out of San Francisco, and a guy walks into the ER and he's been stabbed in the tummy. And he's drunk, but he's walking. The clinical staff, the people at the, who are do the triage, they look at him. They're like, yeah, he definitely has a stab wound in the belly. And there's a bit of like belly fat coming out. And there's a bit of blood coming out. But he seems okay. In fact, he's making small talk with the nurses. He's telling jokes. He's laughing. He's being a babbly drunk. And they're like, all right, let's get this guy, you know, set up for surgery. Somebody's going to sew him up and whatever. They take their time. They do all the things right. They get the surgery room ready. The doctor comes in. And as the doctor starts working on him, the guy just basically dies. And the doctor's like, what is going on? I thought this was a simple stab wound. He opens up a little bit more. This guy's been bleeding internally for hours. But it wasn't showing on the outside. And so they do manage to save him and save his life. But at the end, they realized that they forgot one simple question that could have avoided all of this. Because once they saw how much internal bleeding he had and they went in and they checked, whatever stabbed him went way deep. It wasn't just a knife. Something went all
deep. Samurai sword.
He got stabbed by a bayonet, and they forgot to ask him what stabbed you? What was the weapon? Because you don't think about the middle of San Francisco at a Halloween party that somebody is going to stab you with like a bayonet, right? So out of that came a change in procedure at the hospital, which is to have they added that question to the checklist, which is from now on, if there's a stab wound, part of the procedure is asking what was the weapon, because that could actually save a life. All right. So here's a story from my own life. Years ago, I had a fishing boat and we went on this fishing trip and my brother and I got the boat all ready. So at home, we did all the things that you're supposed to do. We checked the oil. We changed the oil. We ran the engine. We made sure the trailer, the wheels and the bearings, that was all good to go. So we don't lose a tire trailer on the highway, which actually happens frequently with old trailers if you're not careful. We checked that we had enough fuels, that all the fuel lines were okay, that we had, that the rope was okay, that was holding the boat onto the trailer. We did all the things. And then we drive to Northern Ontario. We get to the boat launch and we launched the boat. And I'm about to drive the trailer off. And my brother's like, the boat's taking on water. The boat's taking on water. And so I check around and like, yeah, the boat is taking on water and it's taking on water pretty quickly. And so we managed to get the boat back on the trailer and out of the lake. And we're like, what happened? Well, we forgot the most obvious thing any boater knows about, and that, of course, we knew about. We just completely forgot, which is we washed a boat before we went. And there is a little plug at the bottom of the boat that you can remove.
And then drain it when you're washing it.
Typically, you do remove after you get off the lake to just drain it, right? And we had forgot to put that little plug back in. And just a simple checklist. You know, before you launch the boat, here's a simple laminated checklist that you tape onto the boat beside the console and just like, hey, just check these five things. You know, you're going to have a good time out on the lake as long as you do these things.
So who else has checklists? Pilots, you know, Lewis in the morning. I mean, this is...
Any job that is highly skilled often has checklists, ironically. Any job where like people have to know a lot and it's highly technical, where you think the smartest people in the world...
Investment bankers. No, yeah. Investment bankers, they're evaluating an acquisition. They have a checklist of things that need to happen. Mm-hmm. I think this is independently a good idea, checklist. But it's also a little bit of the symptom of our time, something we talk about here a lot. Maybe Mike knows whatever episode we talked about it the most, which is that the world is more complicated. There are more demands for our attention than ever before. And increasingly, every year, there's more value to be had out of clarifying these things and really systematizing them. Like the difference between doing it and not doing it is greater every year, because otherwise we just become so dazzled and overstretched, which I think is what lots of nonprofit professionals experience. I did, I do, I still do, but I don't think it's unique to nonprofits. I really do think it's just a societal thing. So checklists are one way, and we've talked about other types of processes, but I love that book. Do you use checklists?
Checklist is the easiest place to start, right? You mentioned that people sometimes critique us when we talk about process so much. And the critique is often you're taking the humanity out of it. You're taking the art out of it. You've systematized it as if this thing is an engine, as if fundraising is an engine with very clear inputs. And as long as you follow the inputs, the outputs will follow. And I actually think we're on the same side of the table as those people. We just see it differently. To us, the way to bring more humanity into the work is to take the cognitive load and burden of some of these things and just creating a system so that the more rote tasks or menial tasks or repetitive tasks or whatever, even if they're highly technical, so that we can breathe easy knowing, oh, we've documented a process and we have a checklist and it'll make it easier for me to do those tasks. I now have more energy to do the art and the humanity of this thing.
I mean, think of the alternative, which is you spend most of your workday solving problems caused by not asking how long the knife was, you know, and putting out fires, which doesn't that sound pretty accurate as to, you know, what a lot of people spend a lot of time doing? We're actually, trying to become more human by, I don't know, systematizing the not so nice parts, rote mechanical parts.
There's all these situations that happen in a fundraising shop that actually could benefit from a checklist. So for example, I've been in this situation before. Somebody goes and meets with a donor, and before they go, they're like, I need to know how much this donor has given in the last year so that when we have the conversation, I can reference that. And they look it up and it's like, they've given $10,000. They go to the meeting with the donor. They mention it. The donor's like, well, actually, no. We gave like, I think over 100K this year already.
Painful.
Well,
so look up soft credits. That should be on the checklist.
Look for soft credits. Look for gifts from DAFs and look for gifts from companies. Because in the donor's mind, they may have made a donation personally. They may have made a donation from their company and they may have made a donation through their DAF or through their family foundation, whatever. Those are just different vehicles that the donor makes the gift. The donor doesn't think compartmentalized in those entities necessarily. They just think, this is how much money I've given to charity. So you got to know that. And so just like a simple checklist of, you know, here's four things that we check for.
Well, I went on a rampage once and I actually have that checklist and a bunch of other ones. Some of them have been pretty helpful, but Something else to consider is that I think it mentions it in the book you mentioned that checklists are most effective when you've developed them or your team has been involved in development. And I think it's exactly what you mentioned. So like, as you go, you learn and you add things to it, no?
Yeah. Yeah, we've all downloaded PDFs of consultants who are like, give us your email, download this checklist to do this. And you're like, awesome, I need that checklist. Then we never use it because we didn't create the thing. Mm-hmm. It is very helpful for you to be part of creating it and for you to think it through with your team.
Yeah. So writing checklists, visit checklists, gift processing checklists. Oh my goodness, if we had those. I sometimes think the checklists should be part of the tools that we use. So there's an opportunity now for those who are a little bit more technically oriented, and you can create your own checklist in a Word doc, obviously. But you can also do tons of things with Notion, OneNote, all tools that exist out there. If you're into ChatGPT, you could actually teach your checklist to ChatGPT and ask, you know, ChatGPT to help you with it. So what tools, like how do you operationalize templates and on your team, Mike? Is it forms?
No, it's all Word docs, actually. Yeah, all Google Docs. Yep. And then linked into Airtable, and then a project plan has different steps, and then a step might have a link to it. To a checklist. It takes time, right? This is the thing we're identifying that is not as easy to operationalize, which is I could improve our checklists a lot. I could make it a lot more part of the process, not just have them in Google Docs. You know, there's different ways that you could even use calendar invites to have a checklist, which is like you schedule a meeting and then it's like, okay, make the agenda. Also, let all the stakeholders, like there's, you could have like mini checklists, even in Google invites that you create or calendar. So there's all different ways that you could operationalize this. But the simplest way is to just have Google Docs. And I also print them out. I have like physical, when we record the Build Good Fundraising.
He's showing me one.
When we record the Build Good Fundraising podcast, I've got this sheet of paper on my desk. Oh. It's got a pre-show checklist. Oh. And then it's got a
Everybody, that's why the Build Good podcast is so mechanical and rote, and it's a place you never want to go, versus the Donor Growth podcast. It's the epitome of humanity and improvisation. It's like a jazz concert.
Right. Yeah. So I'll just give you an example. This is for a podcast. This is how a checklist could look. And you might think, really? You need to put that on a checklist? You would forget about that? Yeah, I launched a boat and I didn't have the plug in it, which is the thing that will sink it. So yes, I will forget about certain things. But like pre-show, literally number one is like log into the right Zoom link because I've got multiple Zoom links. Pipe in music from Spotify. Confirm that Becky is in the room and that she has got the right link. Confirm Becky can see people in the waiting rooms and make her the host. Confirm chat is working with Becky. Confirm that the guests are actually in the room by asking them to like use the chat and say hello. Say good morning or good afternoon.
Okay, so here, let's talk a little bit about the culture piece and the leadership piece. And we just have a few minutes, but are we expecting team members? Imagine I'm in an advancement shop. We've hopefully convinced people that there's value in this, even for stuff that's very human art space, the one-on-one gift officer, the rainmaker. Are we expecting the gift officer to develop checklists? Or is this a role of leadership to be thinking more strategically about all this stuff? For instance, I would like to have a standard where every donor visit is followed up with a contact report, a thank you note / summary, you know, something. A meeting with internal stakeholders to debrief. Like, who's responsible for the checklists? Who owns the checklist, Mike?
I think it's up to the team leader to initiate the project, but I think it's got to be a co-creation thing. So even in a meeting saying, hey, we've noticed that after donor meetings, we all kind of do different things. Some of us send a postcard. Some of us send an email. Some of us don't do anything at all. Some of us log it into CRM. Some of us don't. Let's take 10 minutes in this all team in this meeting to figure out a way that we can make sure we're all on the same page. Here's a bunch of sticky notes. I'm going to put 3 minutes on the clock. Let's answer the question. How might we come up with a standard procedure after donor visits. Everybody write down as many ideas as possible. After 3 minutes, you get a ton of ideas. Great. Let's vote on the key three ones. Fantastic. Do we all agree that this is the procedure after donor visits? Now, we were all part of ideating this thing.
Yeah, but it has to come from leadership. It's very hard for this to be a grassroots thing.
Yeah.
That comes up. I mean, that's been my experience. The benefits of this are also compounding and kind of invisible. So at the time, it might seem, oh, goodness, another form to fill in. But as you add gift officers, as you have turnover and have to onboard people, as you maybe see more donors, not having this is really a drag on just the entire operation. It leads to burnout. So in a way, it's very freeing, right? And empowering.
Yeah. Yep. I just want to end by addressing this concern one more time, that checklists and systems and processes takes the humanity out of work. If you think of the most high-end eating experience you can have, like a Michelin star restaurant, where the food, the menu might be different every week, depending on what is in season or what that farm is growing or whatever. And it's this beautiful experience. It's like the most expensive dinner you could possibly have. It's like a 14-course meal, and it's just like all the senses are engaged. What do you think that kitchen looks like? That kitchen is probably the most systematized operation you've seen to deliver that high-end experience night after night after night.
Consistently, right? And so consistently. This is another part of those gains over time. When you're consistent, you get that 1% improvement every day that adds up to a ton at the end of the year.
And even though what they're making is art, it really is art, right? Like these Michelin star restaurants, the food that they create is art. Even though what they're making, you betcha, there's like, hey, we all clean our knives at the end of the night. We all do this. We all do that. When we're done using a pan, here's how we put it away. That's the only way that works, right? Everything is highly systematized, and there's processes, and there's a very clear cultural way of people in the kitchen do things like this. And if you don't do things like this, this is not the kitchen for you.
Hey, Mike and folks, I have to jump, but before we sign off, do you know what I'd add to my podcast checklist?
A proper sign off?
No, I would ask my kids to not play piano while I'm recording the podcast with Mike. Maybe folks have heard that today. So that's going on the checklist for next time. Thank you for bringing this idea to us, Mike.
All right. That's the podcast. Bye, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Donor Growth Podcast, brought to you by the Donor Participation Project and BuildGood.com.
If you found today's episode helpful, please help us by sharing it with a friend, posting about it on LinkedIn, or giving it a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
We'll be back next week, but in the meantime, remember that donor growth is possible.